From Tally to Cali,
it's time to wake up.
Wake up. WarChant.com is your ultimate Seminole sports source.
And this is Wake Up WarChant,
presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.
One more Corner Pocket.
Now here's WarChant.com's ass on Hunjavandi
and Corey Clark.
What is up, everybody? It is Wake Up War Champ, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, Tallahassee, Florida. Coming up on today's show, Corey and I talking about practice, and then bringing on two Titans on the beat to talk even more about practice. Thumbs up if you're listening to us on YouTube. 5-star rating and review, please, on your iTunes, Apple, iOS device. I'm part of the cult. I don't like it. I miss my Android. WarChant.com, the ultimate Seminole sports source. The special still going on. We're going to start every show off with until the special's over. It's going to end at some point. So if you've already signed up, you're probably like, shut up already, Aslan. But listen, we're trying to get everybody on board. It's only $1 for an entire year. You can cancel at any time. I don't think you'll want to cancel because it's only $1. And then after that, you'll be like, man, this is worth it even for $100 a year. I mean, it's $100 for a year, not like a month or anything. So after that, $1 for a whole year, then it's $100. Piece of cake. Do it. Join. WarChant.com. Hop on over there. Corner Pocket Bar and Grill, we are presented by here on Wake Up WarChant. They got a big, big day on Tuesday night, so that's trivia night. Guess who's hosting this one this week? Who is it? Corey?
Well, it's me and it's Stephanie and I. Me and Stephanie. I don't know how the grammar goes there. I don't know if I'm going to be doing it or Stephanie's going to be doing it, but I'm helping with some questions. I came up with an FSU round. Also came up with a another round that I just ran through Aslan, and he did not do well, so I might have to rethink the toughness of those questions. But yeah, we're excited about it. Stephanie's very excited about it. She loves doing it, so we get to do it. We did it. You and her did it maybe last fall.
No, wasn't maybe that, wasn't last, that long ago?
No, it probably wasn't. I think it was in the spring. Yeah. And then she did it on her own maybe a couple weeks after that, just regular trivia. And now we're doing mostly regular trivia with one round. I'll go ahead and tell you, one round of FSU sports.
Okay.
So, but I didn't make them like crazy questions. Aslan, you got 4 of the 5.
I did, yeah. Florida State round, I did well.
Yeah.
The general knowledge, I absolutely bricked, which is funny. Like, I could do really well on Jeopardy, I feel like. Or at least I do well in my living room. Who knows what happens when you're on the set and the lights are on you.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, you made me feel kind of stupid with all these questions. You're like, how do you not know the answer to this? I'm like, I don't know. Like, I know of these events you speak of, but I don't know the – I can't pinpoint the accuracy and give you the name, the particular year, although you gave a little bit of cushion on the year of these things. But,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I can crush, like, world capitals and, you know, historic – actually, you gave me some historic events. I didn't know them either.
It's all right, buddy. It's all right, man. I know you're smart.
All right. Anywho. Corey will be back with us down here in Tallahassee on Tuesday to watch practice as well as Wednesday. And then they're going to go Thursday and Friday in Jacksonville. We will be there as well. Part of a 6-day-in-a-row stretch here for Florida State. Mike Norvell called it our move week. Also called it identity week after practice on Monday. So, yeah, I mean, I just think at this point in camp, right, you've gone through insulation, as Alex Atkins has pointed out. You've been able to kind of see guys in a scrimmage. You've seen them in shells. You've seen them in pads. Now you really put the screws to these guys. And it's going to be a brutal week. You know, they usually go into the indoor for maybe like the last 4 or 5 periods of practice, which ends up being like 45 minutes or so. And when they do a lot of their 11-on-11 stuff, he kept them outside. It was quite hot. Although there's some cover. You know, there's some cloud cover out there on Monday. But, man, I really think, you know, he showed it. There's like a gleam in his eye when he's talking about making this week really, you know, he doesn't say miserable, but he wants to make it really difficult on these guys. Kind of makes sense at this point, right, Corey? Time to really start determining who can be relied on in certain situations, what guys you can count on, and you're too deep, and start moving forward with game planning for Duquesne and LSU, no?
Well, coaches always say, like, the biggest the biggest improvement they'll see from young players especially is after that first, and I'm talking about in the preseason, is after that first scrimmage. Like, it's one thing to go through drills like we talked about yesterday. Most of their practices are drills with some team stuff in. But, man, it's different. It's different going on 7-on-7 where you're not tackling, or one-on-ones, and then being 11-on-11 but only being out there for maybe 6 to 8 plays in 11-on-11 as opposed to 25 to 40 plays, 30 plays, somewhere in that neighborhood. Inside, well, it wasn't inside Doak. It was in the IPF because of Lightning. Hey, who would have thought Lightning in Tallahassee? But that scrimmage, they get to see now how they fare in almost real game-like situations. And then you go and pinpoint what you're doing wrong, what you still have to correct. And like, and I just know, and again, it's not anywhere close to what I do with my son isn't anywhere close to what these coaches are doing. But I think a lot of dads and moms can relate when you're trying to coach your kids and you're like, no, you're doing it wrong here in the fundamental. You're doing it wrong here in practice. No, get your arm up. Or no, get your foot down quicker. And then when they get in a game, and the mistakes that you see in practice carry over to a game and they don't have success, well, now you've got something valid to show them. Like, this is why you didn't see what I've been telling you. This is why it didn't work. And I think coaches with young players, especially young players that are used to being really good, they learn a lot after that first scrimmage. And you could hear when Norvell talked on Saturday night about like incorporating the mistake, and Atkins too, really incorporating the mistakes that were made by the young linemen, getting to work with them. And that's when Atkins said, you find out who the real ones are, the ones that correct those mistakes the quickest and learn from them. And you get to learn without doing it on national TV against LSU or even Duquesne. You get to learn without anybody really seeing you. So when you actually are in front of people, you'll be better.
Well said. Look at you. You weren't even in practice and you distilled down what this week is all about for them. Yeah, I'm curious to see who's going to sort of emerge, and at least from the wide receiver position. I think we know, obviously, defensive line, linebacker's kind of shown itself. You know, we can't really talk too much about offensive line. Everybody was out there, though, so I guess we can mention that. But curious to see how wide receiver works out and then starting to build the chemistry with Jordan, because we'll have Jeff on here later on the show today to sub in for Tom on Tuesday. Tom's got some other stuff going on for the site that we got to free him up for. So Tuesdays with Tom are going to be replaced by Clark and Cameron on Tuesdays.
CNC Sports Factory.
Yeah. Everybody sing now. Well, I didn't sing. I want to talk.
Dance. Everybody,
I know it's
dance now.
But yeah. I want to say it like for a podcast.
Oh, gotcha. Know.
Yeah. Anyhow, I totally butchered that. It's all right, though. We'll keep moving forward. Yeah, it's time, man. It's time to see this offense start to take a step forward. And I think at this point, this is how it happens, right? You go to Jacksonville. You grind it out. That field is not ideal, I don't think, for a full 85 scholarship team to practice on, but they want to do it. They want to make it difficult, and let's see how Jordan can kind of rise to the occasion. I mean, I thought there was a period in there on Monday that, I mean, it was maybe a 10-minute period. They usually go 5 minutes, so maybe it was the course of two periods. But there was a stretch there, I'm telling you, where, you know, you've mentioned on the show before, if you showed up at practice last spring and you were told, hey, one of these guys has, you know, put up about 10,000 yards of total offense in his career, has won, you know, a national championship, wink, wink, thrown for 30 touchdowns, et cetera, et cetera. And the other guy is battling for respect and a place on this team. You know, you would think that Jordan Travis was the former and Mackenzie Milton was the latter. Like, you'd think they were flipped. The roles would be reversed in terms of their resume and how they were performing. Listen, man, there was like a 10-minute stretch there where Tate Rodemaker looked like just gold. I mean, just slinging it, just absolute confidence. I mean, throwing it into traffic, not being scared, absolutely staring down pressure and making great throws all over the field. And Jordan, meanwhile, looked very sort of stiff, mechanical, almost like a guy that was, you know, something else trying to play quarterback. Just didn't look natural, didn't feel natural. And I'm like, good Lord, at some point, this is going to have to catch up to our guy, 13, that is. But then right after that, Jordan comes out, and it's that whole thing you talk about as well, Corey, you know, like two things making each other stronger. And I think, again, Jordan saw the way that Tate performed, and then that immediate period after that, they go into a little bit more of a condensed field, if you will, working with it, and just three touchdowns in a row from Jordan Travis. The second one was pedestrian. We all could have done it, but the other two had really, really good placement against really good defensive backs, playing really good defense, and they were, you know, to guys I think we're going to rely on in the pass game. So it was really good to see him respond that way. And then afterwards, Mike Norvell mentioned he was happy with the way that Jordan practiced because I guess he might be a little bit under the weather. So I had like this whole hot take thing where it's like, this is the day that Tate Rodemaker is taking over, but Jordan's sick, and he still did well after he kind of bounced back from that period. So It's going to be a good little competition going on. So, I mean, Jordan's comfortable and confident that it's his team, Corey, right? Like we don't see him out there being Jameis, but we see him out there being a little bit, you know, vocal and, you know, dapping guys up after plays. Maybe not to the extent that people hope and aspire their starting quarterback to be, but we can't make him be somebody he's not. But the fact that that he is being pushed? I mean, he has to sense something from Tate at this point, right? I mean, it's still his job, but it'd be different if it was just A.J. Duffy or another true freshman had no shot whatsoever. Like, this has to be paying dividends, hopefully, by the time the season starts, that he's being pushed, right?
I mean, I don't know that I would... I guess competition is the right word to frame it as. I don't think Tate Rodemaker is pushing Jordan Travis for the starting spot necessarily at all, really. But I do think that he's making Jordan Travis better and because he's better. And again, like you said, it's not just Jordan Travis or nobody. It's not what Florida State had in 2017 or when Francois went down. It was a huge drop-off. You know, I think Rodemaker has proven enough. You know, I didn't get to see him on Monday, but according to you, sounds like he did well. Yes. I know he's looked really impressive in the practices that I've seen. He's made some really nice throws. He stands tall. He gets it out on time. Again, he's wearing a green jersey, and he's not allowed to be tackled. So it has to translate to the field. But I do think he makes Jordan Travis better because of the way he plays. The way he plays in these practices makes Jordan Travis better because Jordan Travis can't be watching what's going on and think, by gosh, I'm like Jameis and he's like Smag. Like, I've got no threat at all. Like, it's nice that Rodemaker has taken this step. I don't think he's ready to lead this team yet. I could be wrong. I mean, I guess the Miami coaches didn't know what they had in Taylor Van Dyke till Tyler Van Dyke till halfway through the season. So maybe he's that. But it is really good, man, that he continues to play well. And look, there's like we talk with Jordan, there's going to be some things where you kind of just like wince, like, eh. And not wince like, oh, gosh, that's painful, but like, God, I just wish he did that. I just wish he did that better. But there's other things he does that other quarterbacks don't do. Yes. And there's a give and a take there. You know, there just is. So Lamar Jackson
really is,
in college
I mean,
didn't.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. My bad.
I was going to say, like, Lamar Jackson in college wasn't, you know, just throwing dimes everywhere, just like getting it out on time, throwing it quick, middle of the field all the time. And Jordan Travis isn't Lamar Jackson, but there are things that he can get better at, but there's also some things that he's elite at. And so we always have to keep that in mind. Yeah. But yeah, man, I just think the quarterback play, when you think about where, and I wouldn't have thought this again last year, because I didn't think, I'll be honest with you guys, the way we talk about Rodemaker, I didn't really talk about him a ton last year during the fall, but if you had asked me.
I thought he had no shot. Yeah, I thought he was.
Well, no, but if you would ask, I think if you would ask both of us, yeah, like in September, we'd be like, dude, why is that guy here? What's he here for? He's never going to play here. So that's where I was with him last year. But now I think the quarterback room is as good as it's been in a while. That's how bullish I am on Tate Rodemaker and the steps he's made. Still, if he has to play right now, in my opinion, because he hasn't proven anything yet. He hasn't proven it in a game. There's always some trepidation, and with good reason. You know, there's a lot of guys that are great practice players that just, they freeze up in the moment. When it matters the most, if they freeze up, they become different players. That happens in every sport.
But we never saw him perform like this in practice, the way he has.
The spring he did, right? He came on in the spring.
Right. Yes. I was late to come to the show on that. You know, I was late to the party on that one. But, yeah, it just, again, man, he did it in the spring, and I was like, it's spring, whatever. But now that you're in fall camp, you know, I think there's 9 sessions down now. And, again, man, it's not like a flash. It's not like where he goes one – I mean, he's – it is extended, sustained success he's having in moments, you know, and sometimes when he takes a step back or has a bit of a hiccup, we also need to kind of take into account he sometimes gets a little bit of the more, you know, the lesser talent that's out there for this team right now. But like when he's given guys that we think are, you know, part of that too deep, man, he is performing really well. I didn't see it coming. And the fact that, again, that he did in spring, and I'm like, whatever, and he's been doing it now in the fall, I'd be surprised if he goes into a game and were to shrink in the moment. So not advocating for him to take over, but, man, if there's a moment where if something doesn't click for Jordan or, you know, gosh forbid, he goes down, man, I think they'll be all right, man. There was a point where it was like, man, if Jordan goes down, RIP to this season, RIP to maybe Mike Norvell's career. That's not the case anymore. And remember, man, he recruited Tate Rodemaker, so this could maybe prove out to be, another data point for Mike Norvell's tenure of being a good thing, you know, because that's his
quarterback. Again, though, we have to see it, right? Like, yeah. He's a practice player right now. Yeah. We have to see it in a game. That's why I think Duquesne, if they can get a lead, it would be so beneficial. Get the starters out of there. Get Tate Rodemaker in there. Let him enjoy some success when it matters. I thought he was okay in the spring game, but not great. Certainly not as good as he looked during spring. And so you wonder if that's ever in the back of his mind. And I'm not a psychologist, but or a psychiatrist, whichever one I should be.
Like psychiatrist, you can actually prescribe medicine. Psychologist,
that's right.
You just listen and stuff.
That's right. So either way, I'm not either one. But if I was, I'd make you call me doctor. But I do think I want to see it translate into the field where it matters, where people are watching. Wherever that would be, there might be, maybe if this team is pretty good this year, maybe we'll get to see him in a few fourth quarters, man. Mm. And when he gets in there, he won't just be handing off, because they need to build some game confidence in him. I think Tate Rodemaker, man, when you watch him in practice, he plays with confidence.
Yes.
Like, he is not there. Like, A.J. Duffy, to me, still is learning that a little bit. And again, they're playing with different groups of people. But still, when Tate Rodemaker takes a snap, he stands tall, he is poised, he is confident, he scoots up in the pocket when he has to, he trusts his pocket, he trusts what he sees, he steps and he fires quickly, usually putting the ball in a very good spot and with authority. It's awesome to see. But it is one thing to do it in the IPF with 12 media members watching. It is another to do it in the Superdome with 75,000 people there and millions watching on TV. It is just a different animal. Jordan Travis has proven he can do it with people watching. He has made big plays. He has scored touchdowns. He has led a team to wins on the road. He has beaten Miami. He has done all that stuff when it matters, when there's real game pressure on. Tate Rodemaker has not experienced game pressure since, 2019, when he was quarterback at Valdosta High School. Yeah. So that's where you wonder if it can click. But man, yeah, if you'd asked me this time last year, I'd been like, yeah, he needs to be in the portal tomorrow. And that's why I'm not a coach. And you know, that's an issue I have. I'm a little too much. I want it now. A little microwave society action. Mm. But he has really grown. It also helps that he's not splitting reps with three other quarterbacks. You know, he was basically working fourth string last year. How many reps are you getting? Real reps. He got a ton of reps in the spring, and he seemed to grow leaps and bounds. And now you see it again this fall. Like, he just looks like he belongs. And I didn't think he did up until March of this year.
All right. It's usually Tom's turn to come on the show, but we got we're going to the bench. We got a deep bench. This guy might be like the Tyler Van Dyke of the show right now, you know, like on the bench when we bring him in and he lights it up. But that's a bad example. Give me a Florida State guy that came off the bench and set the world on fire, Corey.
How about Casey Weldon in 1990? He was the second stringer to Brad Johnson, then came in and led him to six straight wins and a top five finish. Beat that Penn State team, Joe Paterno. Jerry Sandusky was the DC.
Gross.
Casey Weldon beat them both in the Blockbuster Bowl in 1990.
Let's go. Well said. All right, let's bring on Jeff.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Let's go ahead and bring on the dude, the man, been covering this thing since, 2000, 1998? Host of the eponymous show, The Jeff Cameron Show, that can be listened to 1 to 3 o'clock right here on WarChant TV on YouTube, as well as 93.3 FM in Tallahassee on your radio. Jeff Cameron, everybody. Jay Cameron Show on the Twitter machine. Jeff, woo-hoo! I'm so glad you're here, man. What's up?
It's good to be here, guys. It's been a minute, and I'm excited. Must mean football's very close to happening, and of course, I know we're all pumped about that. And thank you, Aslan, for that introduction. My goodness gracious.
Hey, you know, you deserve it. You earned it, man. You've been grinding. It's been
1998 is correct, by the way. 1998, and when I say that out loud, it seems absurd, all of it. But yeah, 1998 was when I first started covering the team.
All right,
Jeff, when do you think you'll have Aslan on your show?
Anytime he wants.
Are you going to introduce him as warmly as he just introduced you?
I can. Yeah, absolutely. I like Aslan.
Okay, well, there you go. Aslan, how about that, buddy? There's some positive
reinforcement. We're growing. There we go. Party of two now. My mom and Jeff Cameron like me. Awesome. Jeff, you were at Monday's practice. That's why we bring you in here, because if it was just my observation, it'd be kind of dull and boring. So we talked a lot about the quarterbacks, and you know, something that you touch upon throughout your show with Tom Lang, but man, on Monday, again, you know, after practice, we heard Mike Norvell talk about the fact that, you know, Jordan might have been a little bit under the weather, but he was happy with the way he kind of grinded through the practice on Monday. But, man, this Tate Rodemaker kid, which I wasn't believing in spring, and I know you and Corey were talking about, you were impressed by his sort of progress that he had shown. Man, just he looks like a fully functioning, confident, I know where I want to throw the ball, I'm going to do it quarterback. And it's kind of cool. He's not gonna usurp the title away from Jordan Travis at this point. He's pushing Jordan, which is a good thing, but I don't know, man. Do we feel good about the future of this room now with the way that Tate's playing? I mean, has anything changed in your mind after 9 practices on your assessment of the quarterback spot?
I'm rooting for that kid, man. It's been a rough go for him, and I think his skill set certainly translates to playing college football. I mean, he's not devoid of talent. You know, to hear our fan base talk about him, and frankly, you know, he kind of gave them the ammunition to do so, would suggest that he can't play. I think he can play, but I caution myself whenever I think about that and anybody else that watches these reps when he's playing well and he seems decisive, stands tall in the pocket, pre-snap reads very well. He's a better thrower of the football than Jordan Travis by quite a bit in my estimation. I caution myself, though, when I get excited about that. He hasn't done it in front of us under the lights ever. Not once. He didn't do it in the game when he got in. He didn't do it in spring, although the conditions were terrible. Anytime he's been in a situation where he could do it and maybe change our minds in a game-like situation, he hasn't done it. So, you know, I don't know whether to root for him to get that opportunity, because that obviously portends of problems in the quarterback room, meaning that either Jordan got hurt or didn't play up to par or whatever it might be. But I do think he's better equipped to play well and to acquit himself well if he gets the opportunity. And again, I love him if the circumstances were right. And they're not right, though, Aslan. And you guys, Corey, you guys both know this. He's a guy that would need things in front of him to be rock solid. I think he needs the offensive line to be consistently good in pass pro, to create running lanes. I think he would need probably a little bit more in the way of consistency at wide receiver too. And he won't have that. So I still think we know that's why you said he won't usurp Jordan Travis. He won't. I think he would need more things to be in place, but I think his skill set is such that he could play college football. Yes.
We did see a little bit about a reminder. Again, you talk about run lanes, and that's something that Jordan's just going to create naturally, kind of organically, right? It doesn't matter, you know, what they want to throw at him. I mean, the fact that Jordan just by his sheer presence is going to create things. The fact that we saw a little bit of that flash, stuff that was kind of designed for him, which we don't see a lot of in practice because they don't want him to get hit. But was that kind of a reminder, I guess, of people like me that are a little bit cynical? I mean, it was, I guess, to me, that we need to really, we can't fully embrace and understand how effective Jordan can be as a quarterback with his running ability because we don't see it in practice every day. Is that something that we kind of keep forgetting about when we do assess his play?
100%. Aslan, you nailed it. It's 100%. I'm guilty of it because we already know he can run and we know how dynamic of a runner he is. And so in practice, I don't want to see him run. We've already firmly established, Jordan, that you can run. So I need you to throw the ball consistently well. And I want to see incremental improvements there. And I think that you're right. That's what happens, is that we know he can run and we don't want him to, and the coaches don't want him to in practice. And therefore we forget sometimes of just what a dynamic aspect of his game that really is, and how it opens up the running game and how important it is to this offense that he be able able to do that and showcase that skill set. So I'm with you there, man. I'm guilty of it because when he runs, I kind of roll my eyes. I'm like, I don't need to see you run, man. But in a game, it's all fair. It's absolutely important that you utilize probably his – well, not probably, his greatest weapon. You have to incorporate that into your game plan, and defenses do too. And so, yeah, I tend to forget about it, and I shouldn't, because it is an aspect of what we're going to do every Saturday.
And just real quick, just to kind of follow back up on the point you made, Jeff, and Corey and I were talking about a little bit earlier in the show with Tate, and we haven't seen him do it in a game. Totally true. True indeed. But the fact that you and Corey were on top of it in the spring talking about the growth that you saw out of Tate. I was a little bit cautiously optimistic, at best cynical, more likely than not. But the fact that he did it in 15 spring practices, man, we've seen him in 9 fall preseason camps. And again, man, it hasn't been like one good period, one bad period. It's been 4 good periods in a row, maybe a bad run with a little bit of, you know, lesser talent, if you will. The fact that we have seen him do it in practice, I know it's a different thing than doing it in a game, but the fact that it's been sustained now in 9 fall practices coming off a pretty strong spring, doesn't that give you a little bit more hope that if, again, we're not saying that Jordan's not going to have this job, but if something were to happen, the floor for this team now is significantly raised because their backup quarterback is much better than we could have anticipated 12 months ago.
Well, hell yeah. I mean, what's the alternative? That he continue to suck? Yeah. I mean, it's great to see that guy take a step forward and become more consistent. I think his skill set is pretty impressive. And I think in the right situation, he would flourish. But we're not in the right situation. I do like that.
But we see it in practice, Jeff. We're seeing it in practice. I mean, that offensive line is makeshift right now. That's a good defensive line he's going against. There's really good coverage on these guys he's throwing the ball to. I mean, we're seeing it in practice. We're seeing him in suboptimal conditions doing well.
Yeah, man. And I'm rooting for him again. I think it would be awesome to watch him step in and really achieve something in a situation where there would be an awful lot of doubt. I don't think most in the fan base have any reason necessarily to believe in him. They're not at those practices. They've never seen him succeed. And I understand the reason that most people would be jaded if they saw him come into the game. But I do think he's equipped to actually come in and move this football team. I'm not saying against the best teams on the schedule, but I do think against the middling teams, of which there are a ton of 50-50 games on this schedule, he could perform pretty admirably.
Yeah, and I wonder when it comes to what he's doing for Jordan's development. Because, again, I know you guys don't get to watch, and I'm talking to the listeners, they don't get to watch these practices, but Jordan has to see what Tate's doing. And I hope he feels challenged by it. And not like, and I think he is, because, again, I said that day that Rodemaker led them down the field, just ripping the ball down the field, 75 yards and like 6 plays, like the very next series for Jordan Travis, he threw his best throw of the day in the middle of the field. On time, on target to Pittman. And I just hope that helps Travis develop. Like in the meeting rooms, when they're going back over film and he's seeing where Rodemaker's putting the ball and how quickly he's putting the ball on a receiver, that raises Jordan's game. If Tate Rodemaker was the same guy he was a year ago, there's no game that's being raised. But now I feel like with that skill set that he has that's different than Jordan's, it could raise the bar of what Jordan sees this all. Oh, yeah, okay. Okay, maybe he's not wide open, but Pokey got enough inside of that guy that I can make that throw and he's going to go get it and make that play. That maybe Jordan Travis didn't see that a year ago.
Yeah, and, you know, it's an interesting question, Corey. I think certainly anytime the guy that is your backup is elevating his level and at times having more success, at times, than you are, you're going to feel, I think, quite naturally compelled to go out and put your best foot forward and compete and showcase again why it is you're the starter. That's just natural. I mean, anybody's going to do that. But I wonder, you talked about in seeing it done, seeing that aspect of the playbook utilized properly and executed well. I do wonder if that opens up his mind to the idea that throw's there. There are designations within these complementary routes that I have to look to that are available to me that I've sometime passed over. But that begs this question to both you gentlemen, and I ask you this because I've wondered this in my own mind several times at practice. Is he tall enough to see it?
Oh.
I mean, honestly, I sometimes wonder when I see those throws down the seam that he doesn't make, that Rodemaker does make, there is a very significant difference in their height. I wonder if he just doesn't see it.
I've never thought about that. Can't you, but and I'm it's, not... on Monday, it was on display, man. Like, dude, Tate just as pre-snap knows where he wants to go. As soon as the ball hits his hand, he's making his drop. He's already figured it out, man. And maybe that does come to the point where it's like an actual physical impairment in terms of the 4 or 5 inch difference that we have between maybe what. Three. I mean, Jordan's probably 6'1". I don't know what he's on the roster, but Tate's a legit 6'4". So I don't know. That could be part of it. That's fair.
And there is a reason. It's probably two reasons that there's one reason. I mean, they want tall quarterbacks. Like, that's why 6'5" guys is what they want in the NFL. That's why the guys that are like Russell Wilson, they don't get drafted that high. Russell Wilson's had a very nice career, but a lot of his plays are outside the pocket too. It's just not ideal to be 6'6", 6'1" when you got guys in front of you that are 6'6". But Jeff, and I have not played quarterback at the Division I level. I don't know how many people understand that, but I have not. You thought I was. You knew me in high school, and you didn't understand why I wasn't getting the offers. But being 5'9", it just didn't come to me. But when you're playing quarterback and you're shorter, aren't you – you have to trust – because, no, you can't necessarily see everything that's going on right behind those big linemen. But you're reading the safeties, right? And you're reading the linebackers, and you should be able to see where they are. It's just a matter of trusting your receiver, because maybe you don't see your receiver making his cut right behind the 6'7" tackle that they got you. So you have to trust that your receiver is where he's supposed to be. You can probably see the safety because the safety's further downfield, but maybe you don't trust what you see peripheral. You're in your periphery because you've got so many giants around you.
Yeah, and they are bigger up front than they've ever been.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. I do think that you're at a distinct disadvantage that you have to overcome routinely if you are a small quarterback in the pocket. Doesn't mean it can't be done. We've seen it. You rightly pointed out Russell Wilson, and obviously Drew Brees had a great career, and he was tiny. But that is when you're on the same page with NFL receivers and all you do is work on football and study a playbook 24 hours a day, and you have guys that can get separation and that you trust implicitly. So I think within this group, when you've had a shoddy offensive line and poor receiver play, and you're trying to get into a rhythm with those guys and trust them, as I say, implicitly, how easy is that to come by when you've had the reps that he's had starting at Florida State? It can't be easy. And that's what camp's about, is hopefully discovering that and figuring out that synergy and having guys emerge. And the more you rep that throw, and even if you don't quite see it clearly, you throw it in anticipation, knowing the playbook, knowing that they know the playbook, and put it in the area of the field that you're trained to put it in, even if you don't see it. You better believe that those guys have got to, you have to connect on that time and again for you to begin to trust that and let it go.
Jeff, after practice, Coach Norvell called this their move week. I guess it's Saturday at the Masters for them. It's identity week. Is this the time? You talked about, we've seen Jordan run. You know, it's like, I don't want to see you run. I want to see you throw the ball. I mean, I've seen them rotate all these guys in different situations. They've brought in all sorts of different personnel groupings. They've mixed and matched receivers with quarterbacks. I mean, this feels like, is this not the week to kind of figure out who you want to go into New Orleans with, who you want to go Friday night into Louisville with to be able to count on and rely on? Does it feel like this truly is kind of like a pivotal week in terms of we'll be able to see just how much growth this team has made going into the season?
Some of that, in my opinion, Aslan, is a head coach understanding that this week sucks for those kids. It is so hard now that the newness and the enthusiasm and the excitement surrounding the start of camp wanes and you get into the supposed dog days. It is 100 degrees and humid every day here. You're repping against the same dude you repped against the day before. It is frustrating. You've started to feel the effects of the days that have added up and the bumps and the bruises from full pads now. And he does not want them to take a step back or to coast or to feel like they have an understanding of what they're being asked to do and not give 100% on each and every play. He wants them to push through those barriers. So some of this to me about this is prove who you are week. This is where we discover it and all that other stuff that he talked about today. A lot of coaches say that when we get into, you know, practice 10, 11, 12, and he's going to put them through the ringer to see how mentally tough they are to push through all that. I don't think you have to know on August the 9th or 10th or 11th who your starters are going to be at every position. I do think you got to be getting a lot closer. I do think you are beginning to vet certain position battles, but I think you could get through this week and still have some questions and figure out the answers to those questions at a later date. I just think he wants to push the buttons and let them know now's not the time, just because you're tired and you're getting sick of seeing each other and the wear and tear of camp is getting to you, to back off the throttle. You guys got to keep pushing through so that you can find new boundaries. I mean, this isn't a team that's accomplished anything. They can't afford to kind of take a step back and just kind of go through the motions of a rep. They have to get better each and every time they're out there. It's cliche, but it's true, especially for teams that haven't done anything. If guys at Georgia or Alabama take a Tuesday off, I doubt the coaching staff is in a panic mode. I think they understand that five-star is going to show up tomorrow. But, man, at a place like Florida State where they haven't had a winning record in years, I think he's going to continue to push them and say all of those types of motivational things.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Last thing on the way out, the coaches poll came out, Jeff. Five teams in the ACC are ranked, four of them Florida State plays. And, you know, all four of the teams that they play that are ranked, I think most fans are going to call them 50-50 coin flip games. So what does that say? Do the coaches not know how to rank these teams? Are we overconfident? Is it a down year for the ACC? Or is Florida State maybe not that far off the pace of these teams that the, again, Clemson's fourth, Corey. I don't know if you've seen this. Clemson's fourth. I can't believe they're fourth. Miami 17th, NC State 13th, Wake Forest 19th.
Well, think about those teams you just listed, Aslan. They led Clemson with 4 minutes to go last year. They beat Miami. They were in a one-score game with NC State, and their starting quarterback had the flu, and so Mackenzie Milton had to play the whole game. And then Wake Forest, they had six turnovers and got the bejesus beat out of them. Like, they weren't far away from those teams last year.
I'll give you, it's interesting. That's one perspective. The other is that NC State's offensive and defensive line are veteran to go along with Leary at quarterback. I think that is a road game. I don't think you're going to win that game. It's a road game against Miami. You mentioned Florida State beat Miami last year. They did here in the waning seconds. This year it's on the road, and Van Dyke has had more time under center. I don't think they'll win that game. They're going to be an underdog in a game to a team that you haven't mentioned, which is Louisville, who did beat Florida State here in Tallahassee. The Clemson game, Clemson will be heavily favored despite how close that game was a year ago. And Wake Forest, probably a toss-up, although I think Wake right now, if without a game having been played, given Hartman and the experience, will be favored in that game as well. So that's five teams. I know we mentioned the four that are ranked and one that isn't, that Florida State will be an underdog to. That is not to say they can't win those games. They could win every one of them. I don't think they will, but they could. I think that if you look at those games, you have to think 3-2, no worse than 2-3. You have to find a way, certainly, to be in every one of those games if you do fall, because you're not at such a talent deficiency this year where you ought to get blown out by anybody. Wake should not blow you out. You shouldn't get beat badly on the road against Louisville or anything like that. So, yeah, Corey, I can see it both ways, man. I think that's what makes this schedule so meaty and why we're all so nervous. If you're really rooting for Florida State to take a big step forward and go from 5 wins to 8 wins or, God forbid, 9 wins and prove themselves and, more importantly, to recruits that they are taking that bold step forward to be back into the top 25, well, you got to win a majority of those games, and those are all 50-50 to slight underdog roles for Florida State. It's a tough schedule,
Yeah, it is. But my point being, 2 years ago, they didn't have any 50-50 games. They were all 90-10. Right. Like, you know what I mean? Like, they have made enough strides that none of those games are absolute can't-win games.
True.
They just are. They aren't. Like, the talent now, the roster now, is a competent ACC Division I Power 5 football roster. That's what's been built. And you go into the season knowing you have a chance in these games. You're not going to win all of them, clearly, but you can stay on the field with everybody on your schedule. You should stay on the field with everybody on your schedule. 2 years ago, clearly, 19, 18, you couldn't stay on the field with hardly any of them.
Yeah, and that goes back to the offensive line, I think, honestly. Yeah. I think just you couldn't block any of those guys. So I think they have the requisite depth and talent to block those guys. They're not going to be elite on the offensive line, but they won't be turnstiles either.
Yeah, and you remember the NC State game, because we had a big argument about it, or a discussion, a lively discussion. You know, they had stopped NC State like five or six straight times in the second half, like to get the ball back where NC State hadn't scored, and it was a 21-14 game, and then Norvell went for like it on fourth and four on his own side of the field, didn't get it, and NC State punched it in to put the game away. But even last year, they were in that game, and that's, I guess, in every other game after the first half of the Louisville game, they competed with everyone. Sure. And you just want to see that carry over. You're not just here to compete, folks. I get it. You need to win these games. But by gosh, they're a lot closer now to being one of the top teams in the ACC. It just feels like they're closer to that elite status, if you can call anybody in the ACC elite besides Clemson, than they were 18 months ago. You feel
don't
better
you think,
going into the season.
Don't you think, both of you guys, don't you think that, listen, in order to have the requisite confidence and belief that you can win those games, it's going to take them winning either the LSU or Louisville games? I mean, they can't lose both those games. Oh, it could fall off the tracks if they don't win one of those games.
That's a catastrophe if they lose both those games. I can't imagine this season. I can't imagine them getting to a bowl game at that point. No, there's too much confidence with them that if, and it's not false confidence. I mean, they believe in the work they've put in. They look around and see the guys that they're competing with, and they believe in them. If they go and lose to LSU, who is not in good shape right now, I don't think, and then Louisville, I mean, so you've got an ACC loss. You've lost to an SEC team prime time that you're putting a whole bunch of chips in. You lose those two games. I know they fell into an 0-4 hole last year and they fought their way out of it, but I don't know if you can do it 2 years in a row. That'd be I don't see that happening. It could, but that'd be just short of catastrophic in my opinion.
I don't think catastrophe is I think that's a little too strong, because you would be 1-2 at that point. God forbid they beat Duquesne, and you haven't played a home game yet. So I don't think it's catastrophic necessarily, but it's certainly troublesome. And the Florida State fans will be right to question whether it's ever going to be get any better. But last year, it looked like they were going for a 1-11 season, and they turned it around. Yeah. So things can happen. But yeah, they definitely need to win one of those two games. But if they're 1-2 coming home to play whoever that is in that fourth game,
Austin,
I like to look at it one.
Yeah,
I like to look at them 1 week at a time, guys. I don't look ahead. I'm all about Duquesne right now. Yeah. But if they come home and beat the Boston College and they're 2-2 after four games, it's not the end of the world. But man, it would be so much sweeter to be 3-1.
Well,
golly,
you would remove,
just go
you,
do
you,
it.
Yeah, you'd remove any margin for error once again,
yes,
and you would have lost all enthusiasm, any of the buzz, and then more importantly to all of that, I mean, recruits would be like, "Yes, yeah, same old sorry ass Florida State."
Yeah.
And good luck winning them back at the timeline now in recruiting where guys have to make decisions. It's like, I just think they have to win one of those two games. Yeah. I really don't think you can go one. And you're right, Corey. I guess in theory they could be fine, but I'm telling you, I think for all intents and purposes, if they're 1-2 and their one win is Duquesne, not saying that's going to happen, by the way, they should win one of those two games. But if they were to lose them both and they were 1-2 with a win over Duquesne, man, I don't know. I begin to wonder if they are able to keep the team locked in.
Yeah,
I do.
And look, they're coin tosses, right? We refer to both those two games as coin tosses. And, you know, if you flip a coin, math tells you you're going to win one and lose one. That's how coin tosses normally. It's 50-50 proposition. So, yeah, if you lose both of those, then, yeah, those are two coin toss games that you've already lost. Well, now you've got to go win two or three more coin toss games. Like you said, the margin of error is just gone.
And fans would just look at Norvell and say, so every close game we play, you're going to lose?
Yeah, and we're not coming to Boston College, man. We're not coming to watch you play Boston College. We're not. We're going to be 45,000, 50,000 people in that stadium, maybe.
But we don't think that's going to happen, kids.
No.
3-0. 3-0, number 19 in the country. Welcome in Boston College to town.
Boom. I love it.
Hey, I lied. One last thing, Jeff.
Grief.
I just want Jeff to cheer us up because it's a bit of a bummer. I'm looking at the coaches poll. You know, Baylor's 10th. Aranda got hired in 2020. He had to deal with the COVID year. Michigan State's 14th, Mel Tucker, 2020, COVID year. Sam Pittman, Arkansas, 23rd, 2020, COVID year. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss, 24th, hired 2020, COVID year. That's another thing, too. I mean, these guys that got hired in the same cycle have figured a way. And listen, Ole Miss was 4-8 in 2019. Arkansas had not won a game in the SEC in 2019. They went 2-10. I know Arkansas got a couple guys drafted. That's a big deal. But the fact that those programs got things turned around just puts that much more of an impetus to get this thing figured out this season. I mean, that's kind of what strikes me now looking at this top 25 poll more than anything is that, man, we were all on the same exit, it feels like.
The only difference is those guys weren't the third coach in 4 years at those programs. And I think that is the other part of this, is that Florida State saw a coaching change with Jimbo and a disastrous end to his tenure, followed by a very brief and disastrous run for Willie Taggart. And then you bring in Mike Norvell, who's now at that point your third coach in 4 years, and you're starting over in recruiting again. Those other guys took over disastrous situations, true, and they've certainly made the most of it. It wasn't quite the equal of Florida State's disaster, which was just a complete dumpster fire.
Yeah, well, you almost had to get rid of Ole Miss had to get rid of Hugh Freeze, and then there was Matt Luke, and then Matt Luke gave way to Lane, and then
Hugh Freeze had success there to some extent, especially cheating in recruiting. So they had some players.
Yeah, well, they're on similar timelines though. The Freeze to Luke to Lane, as we were Jimbo to Willie. Yeah. To Norvell, as Arkansas was a Bielema. I mean, Chad Morris was Willie Taggart 2.0. He was the SEC's Willie Taggart. He got hired when Willie got hired, and he got fired when Willie got fired, too. So,
yeah, in some ways, we opened the door for Chad to be fired by firing Willie.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I would say, though, real quick, to just counterbalance that a little bit, let's see what the end of the season polls are like.
Yep.
And if those four teams are ranked.
Absolutely.
Because it's just a preseason poll. And, man, trust me, I know it would be great if you went into a season this year thinking Florida State was 19th in the country. That would mean they accomplished something last year and had some exciting players coming back that the country knew about. So they are ahead of Florida State. But let's see what Sam Pittman does this year. Let's see how good Michigan State is this year, or Arkansas, before we, that the race is to the end of this year to see where these four programs are. That's all.
Yeah. Well, and at the end of the day, all of it's a moot point. If they go 8-4 and right the ship, we're not worried about what anybody else is doing at that point. There will be proof of concept to both recruits and fans, and the energy will be back in this place. It's been a minute. We could all use it.
And well, Travis said. Hunter will be on his way.
Probably
so. He just wanted to see 8 wins.
Yeah.
Jeff Cameron, the Jeff Cameron Show, 1 to 3 o'clock, 93.3 FM in Tallahassee, in the car, on your laptop, as well as War Chant TV, which is our streaming YouTube channel for warchant.com. Hit the thumbs up on the way out. Subscribe, everybody, to the website. It's $1. One American dollar, everybody. Get with it. For Jeff and Corey, I'm Aslan. Thank you for listening to Wake Up War Chant, presented by Corner Pocket Bar and Grill.